WNYC Studios is supported by Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, where hundreds of researchers make new discoveries inspired by the work of previous Dana-Farber scientists. Learn more about their momentum at danafarber.org/everywhere.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. By the way, if you want to take a test and see if you were paying attention in our last segment, our news and politics quiz question on our politics site, it's freecountry.org, is about the new provisions in the health reform law that just took effect. So go see if you can answer that quiz question at freecountry.org. Now some thoughts about a special link between Israel and the United States, as seen by the authors Todd Gitlin and Leah Leibovitz. They've written a book called The Chosen Peoples, which explores the notion of divine chosenness in each country, for better and for worse, and how that idea keeps the two nations close. Todd Gitlin chairs the PhD communications program at Columbia University and is the author of a dozen books, including the bestseller The 60s, Years of Hope, Days of Rage. Leah Leibovitz is a communications professor at NYU, an editor of Tablet, an online magazine of Jewish life, and a former non-commissioned officer in the Israeli Defense Forces. The full book title is The Chosen Peoples, America, Israel, and the Ordeals of Divine Election. Thanks for coming in today.
Pleasure, Brian.
First, explain the term in the title, divine election. What does that mean?
The evident, according to believers, fact that once upon a time God singled out Abraham of all persons and for unexplored reason or reasons unexplained by him, declared that his people would forever be designated as the sort of special operations team for him.
Special operations team.
Well, that they were his favorites. And, you know, what we argue in the book is that this, whether you believe it or not, it's been a formative idea in, you know, in not only in Israel, but in America, which even before the pilgrims got here was declared to be God's new Israel.
And before we go to the U.S. part of it, Leo, in Judaism, I think most scholars would say that the idea of chosenness isn't about being God's favorite, a superiority, like I'm better than you because I'm chosen. It's about responsibility to live well under God's ethical principles and to advocate for them among the people. Would you put it that way?
Absolutely, and this is very much the way you put it in the book. Let me just say that when we started reading about the idea of chosenness, when we started reading the Bible seriously, it is a profoundly strange idea because here you have, you know, the moment at Mount Sinai when the people are standing and God is about to deliver his word. If this was a Hollywood movie, you know, this would be the pinnacle, the epic moment. And God comes out and says, you know, you'll be unto me a kingdom of priests, a holy nation. Good night, everybody. And the people below are left asking, and we are left asking with them, hold on, why were we chosen? Chosen towards what? Who is chosen? Can we become unchosen at any point? God never answers that. The Bible never answers that. So what we're left with is a huge mystery. I absolutely agree with you that the better interpretation of this idea is understanding it not as a divine mandate but as a huge burden and responsibility. But unfortunately, there have been strands of thought and ideologies throughout generations that have seen it in the opposite way.
And Todd, explain where you think divine election comes in the founding of the United States. The founders were Christians in almost all cases, but put freedom of religion and freedom from state religion in the Constitution.
Let me just add one thing to what Leal just said. The reason we have ordeals in the subtitle is that we go with that strand of the tradition that says that, no, this is not a get-out-of-jail-free card. It's sort of not a, use whatever weaponry you have in any circumstance card. This is a responsibility. What's fascinating about the American case is that even before even before the Puritans got there, there was this very strong idea that was built into English Puritanism. That it actually began with the idea that England was a chosen nation, but when the Puritans were oppressed, and they were unsettled about their prospects, they declared, without ever having seen this place, that this was God's new Israel. And there were actually extensive sort of theological / strategic debates about whether God's new Israel was all of the New World, or whether it was just the English part, or how many miles was it from Jerusalem. I mean, there were many angels counted on the ends of many pins.
So do you see, and maybe this is your central idea in the book, do you see Israel and the U.S. consciously drawn to each other by this shared sense of chosenness?
Semi-consciously, I would say. That, we go through the arguments for the special relationship. That's the last part of the book. You know, it's often said Israel is the only democracy in the Middle East. Well, the truth is, there are a lot of other democracies, like India, for example, by far the largest in the world, or South Korea, which we don't feel we have a special affinity with. The important thing to understand is why, even at great strategic cost, the United States has been a intimate ally of Israel, even at the cost of alienating the oil producing countries. I mean, sort of, this is in the narrow sense irrational. So we think that there is this subterranean recognition.
Some people are calling in. We can take a couple of questions on the idea of chosenness as a link between the United States and Israel. For Todd Gitlin and Leah Leibovitz, authors of The Chosen Peoples, America, Israel, and the Ordeals of Divine Election. Leah, Todd said semi-consciously it ties people together. Do you think the average American or average Israeli thinks of the alliance on that level, or is it just more geopolitical than that? Israel needs a strong guarantor living in a hostile part of the world. The U.S. needed an outpost in the Middle East during the Cold War and now maybe during the War on Terror era. Is it not just that practical an alliance?
I don't think it is. I'm a ninth generation Israeli who emigrated to the United States 11 years ago next week. I think that for the majority of Israelis, when you say, America, you seldom say the United States. It's sort of a beaming, shining Mecca of freedom and liberty. I think there is a spiritual affinity there that is very strong. And I think for the majority of Americans, the same is true. When you say Israel, it's not just like saying, Sweden or India or any other democratic nation in the world. There is something gleaming about it. There is something special. So I think there's absolutely a special friendship there to speak of.
Leah, do you see the notion of divine election as relevant to the current peace process and the debate over West Bank settlements? The settlements have, I think for most Israelis and Israeli politicians, been framed as a security issue, not God gave us Judea and Samaria 5,000 years ago, which only certain very Orthodox people claim.
Well, we spent a lot of time, both personally and in the book, trying to ascertain or think seriously about the question of the settlements. If you look at it rationally, it makes very little sense. When the settlements came into being, the sort of left-leaning or at the very least centrist Israeli Labor government was in power. And you see Moshe Dayan and Yigal Alon and all these people who were then in charge of security presenting very detailed maps that did not include any of the existing settlement blocks. And you see one by one governments on the left and on the right sort of capitulating to this idea. We think the reason has to do less with security and less with rationality, but more with some sort of notion that the settlers, in their zeal for this messianic idea of having a right to the biblical land, actually speak to some sort of hidden and dare I say repressed notion that even very secular Israelis hold, which is we're here in Israel for a reason. Ask most Israelis; they will still define themselves as Zionists. If you talk to Italians today, 160 years after Garibaldi, no Italian would define himself as a Garibaldist. Yet Israelis still say, I'm a Zionist, sort of holding on to this 19th century nationalist movement entrusted with establishing a Jewish homeland in Israel, which
Which includes all of that land?
Well, the definitions vary. But the question is, why are we still defining ourselves in the terms of this movement that has accomplished its mission, you know, at the very least 60 years ago? And we think that the reason is there are still these messianic yearnings, even at the heart of very secular Israelis, still this idea that we're here in modern Israel to do something else, to establish a different sort of country.
Chris in Piscataway, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I heard the gentleman mention that the Bible mentioned that the Jews are the chosen people. That is true. That is in the Bible. But later on, because the Bible says, because of the disobedience of the Jews, in Galatians 3:28, I don't want to go into a whole religious thing, but in Galatians 3:28, if anybody cares to read, it says, there is no longer Jew or Gentile, slave or free, male or female, for you are all one in Christ. So God basically said, all right, you've been disobedient, you were indeed the people I wanted you to show as an example to the world what obeying God, what is the example? And they disobeyed, so God said, you know what? There's no more Jews or Gentiles, free or slave. Everybody's children of Christ, and we all should obey Christ.
Chris, thank you very
much.
Rabbi Gitlin, was this in
the contrast renounced in the New Testament? Came up, is very important, and actually casts a lot of light on what is actually volatile and dangerous about the idea of chosenness, because the temptation of those who have not been sanctioned by one text or another as chosen people is naturally enough to be resentful. You know, okay, who's, you know, why is it you? Why isn't it us? And, you know, this issue comes up very early, and it certainly comes up for the Jews who then declared they were Christians a few centuries after Christ died. And then it shows up again in Islam. I mean, the same claim is made that the Muslims are a chosen people. So we have a whole chapter about the situation of the so-called unchosen. So
that doesn't link Saudi Arabia and the United States.
No, it does not link Saudi Arabia and the United States. I mean, obviously, the book is and the argument, the reality is more complex. If I may, we're going to be at the YMHA Monday night at 8 with Jeffrey Goldberg of The Atlantic, and I'm sure we're going to get more deeply into these matters.
Which
at,
Y
at
is
92nd,
that? Oh,
Atlantic.
The 92nd Street Y. Yeah. Monday night at 8.
Yeah.
You were just, you know, talking about the problem with the idea of chosenness, but you do also write that you set out thinking that chosenness was an idea that needed to be discredited, but you came away thinking about more about the cruder versus subtler interpretations, you know, of the themes in both American and Israeli national identities. What some of the,
well,
the better ones?
I mean, the practical thing is that, you know, we now have a millennia of history that have been built on the premise of chosenness and the fight over chosenness. So just in practical terms, you don't roll back the boulder of history. Mm-hmm. But the second thing is that, you know, the more we looked at the debates about the nature of chosenness that run through both both Jewish and American history, the more rich they actually are. And in fact, the problems that we've been talking about here with chosenness were identified, you know, really quite early. I mean, there are debates, burning debates going on in the 12th, 13th century in what was then Spain, you know, Convivencia Spain. And so we think there's actually, you know, I mean, you don't, I think, get anywhere trying to preach to the tiger that he should become a pussycat.
But there is also a lot that we found in our research that profoundly inspired us. We read Abraham Lincoln, for example. Lincoln mentions this idea of the chosen people only once. You know, it's 1861. He'd been elected president. He's making his way from Springfield to D.C. And he stops to talk to the New Jersey State Senate, and he says something like, God, you know, let me be a protector of this land and this almost chosen people. And that struck us so deeply, this sentence, almost chosen people. And we think what Lincoln is trying to say is, well, if you believe in it, this is a right that has to be earned. And it has to be earned repeatedly. And when we listen to Obama's speech about choosing our better history, you know, in his inaugural speech, we think we detect very much the same sentiment there.
We just have like 45 seconds. But do you think the Israeli idea of chosenness and the American idea of chosenness ever get in each other's way as opposed to complementing each other and drawing the countries closer?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, I would say so. I would say that the most intransigent of the settlers interpret chosenness in the territorial sense. And they're very angry with Obama and obviously with Palestinians who feel otherwise, that whose interpretation of chosenness is spiritual rather than territorial.
Anything to add?
I completely agree with that. But I think that if we look deeply into this idea and find its better histories, we would find a lot to bring us together.
Leah Leibovitz, communications professor at NYU, editor of Tablet, an online magazine of Jewish life, one of the editors there. Former non-commissioned officer in the Israeli Defense Forces, and as he told us, an 11th generation Israeli. And Todd Gitlin, PhD Communications Program Chair at Columbia. They are the authors of The Chosen Peoples, America, Israel, and the Ordeals of Divine Election. Again, they'll be at the 92nd Street Y Monday night at 8. Thank you both.
Thank you.